cards with a 6-9 swing man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go.
Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike. And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, August 21st, 2009. Mere 15 days from the start of football season here. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today are...
Bobby Colilli, football beat writer.
Mike McCall, football beat writer.
Kyle Maestri, football beat writer.
Before we get into the topics today, we do have a lot to talk about. I want to extend a thanks to the listeners for getting us into the iTunes Top 100 in our section, College and High School Sports Podcasts. I'm a goal-oriented person myself, much like all these football players are going to be talking about here. And that was my one goal, and we accomplished it. So let's keep pushing ourselves forward in that top 100. And let's get us past what we're behind right now, the podcast called Free Case of Monster Energy Drink, which is literally an advertisement for a free case of Monster Energy Drink, and that is currently one spot ahead of us. So let's work on that. But for now, let's talk about all the stuff we got to talk about on today's show. McCall, lead us off with this SEC Games of the Week thing.
Yeah, the first thing we want to do is go game by game, or go week by week through the SEC, you know, composite schedule, and pick out what we think the best game will be of that week. You know, college football season's right around the corner. There's a lot to be excited about, and I think this is the best way to really get started on it. So let's start with week one. On September 3rd, the first game in the conference is going to be South Carolina at NC State. Then over the weekend, there's Alabama against Virginia Tech. That's in Atlanta. Missouri State at Arkansas is going to be a barn burner in Little Rock. Louisiana Tech at Auburn, Charleston Southern at Florida, Georgia at Oklahoma State, LSU Washington, Jackson State, Mississippi State, Western Kentucky, Tennessee, Western Carolina, Vanderbilt, Kentucky against Miami of Ohio. Then on Sunday, September 6th, it's Ole Miss at Memphis, which is actually a pretty big rivalry game because they're very close to each other. So let's go through, see what everybody thinks the best game is going to be that week. My money, and I think it should be all of our money collectively, is on Alabama, Virginia Tech, and Atlanta. Second year in a row that Alabama opens their season with a neutral site game in Atlanta. Last year they played Clemson. This year they might actually be playing a good ACC team. A lot of people have picked Virginia Tech as kind of a dark horse national title contender, although with their running back out now, Darren Evans, that might change. So what do you guys think?
I actually think that Georgia, Oklahoma State is the one I most want to see. I like Bama Tech, though. I think they're both going to be really, really good games. But I'm going to go Georgia, Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State's a better team than Virginia Tech, most likely. I don't know. We'll see as the season plays out. At the very least, it'll probably be more exciting and more highly offensive than the other game.
I agree with Kyle. Oklahoma's coming in with a lot of hype with Zach Robinson and Dez Bryant. So it's a team that is considered to be right along with Oklahoma and Texas with a chance with the national championship. Georgia's kind of in a rebuilding mode, so it'll be kind of interesting to see how well they can stack up against a team that's supposed to be a top five team, top 10 team.
I actually agree. I thought, McCall, when you were saying like the one that it should all be, I thought it was going to be Georgia, Oklahoma State, but clearly not. But that would be my game of the week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either of those teams really have a chance to do anything huge this year. Alabama could conceivably get back to the SEC championship game. If they knock off Ole Miss and LSU, they could end up in the national championship if things go their way. If they can beat Florida, we're assuming Florida makes it. But I mean, Oklahoma State's in the Big 12; they're fighting through a really stacked.
Yeah, but
you know,
we're just
conference.
Talking about one game, I thought, anyway. So
yeah.
I'm just going off of this particular matchup. I'd rather watch the Georgia game than a potential, like, 20-13 Alabama Tech game. So
I'm thinking implications, like what it could mean for the season.
I think Virginia Tech's really going to struggle that game, though, because they're trying to replace Darren Evans that game. First game of the season, playing probably one of the best defenses in the country and one of the best run-stopping defenses in the country, which is Virginia Tech really relies on. So having to try to bring in a new running back is going to be very difficult that first game.
All right, well, week two, we got kind of a down week. FIU at Alabama, Mississippi State, Auburn, Troy, Florida, South Carolina at Georgia, Vanderbilt at LSU, and UCLA at Tennessee. Really only two games to choose from there between South Carolina at Georgia and UCLA at Tennessee. I'm going to go with South Carolina, Georgia, just because I think, you know, getting into the conference games and kind of, you know, if South Carolina can knock off Georgia, then they've got a decent – I mean, they could end up finishing second in the East. That has some implications for the SEC East, which is very interesting to me. What do you guys think?
I'm going with UCLA-Tennessee. It's kind of Lane Kiffin's it's kind of a redemption game for Tennessee and for Lane Kiffin to kind of jump on the scene, because last year UCLA beat Tennessee, and everyone thought UCLA was rising to power and then realized that Tennessee is just really bad that year. So this way, if they can beat UCLA, who's coming in with a good amount of hype with Rick Neuhaus's second year, that if they can beat that team, then it kind of gives Lane Kiffin some credibility right away.
Yeah, I actually agree with Bobby again. I'm going to go with UCLA, Tennessee. This one's, like, very, very close to me, though. I think both of these games are mediocre games, though. I'm not too excited about either of them. But I'll just take UCLA, Tennessee for the non-conference aspect.
Not to go 3-on-1 again, but I would also take UCLA, Tennessee. I feel like, you know, kind of like Bobby said, it's going to be Lane Kiffin's coming out party. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how he reacts on the national stage.
All right, and week 3, North Texas at Alabama, Georgia at Arkansas, West Virginia at Auburn, Tennessee at Florida, Louisville at Kentucky, Louisiana Lafayette at LSU, Southeastern Louisiana at Ole Miss, Mississippi State at Vanderbilt, and Florida Atlantic at South Carolina. This time you all have to agree with me. Tennessee at Florida is the best game of the week.
I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, once again, if Lane Kiffin can beat UCLA, Lane Kiffin's Tennessee team can beat UCLA, and they'll be coming in with, you know, some momentum into the UF game, which has been building up over, you know, since he got hired, basically, and has taken shots at Urban Meyer, taking shots at pretty much all of UF's programs. So it'll be very a very interesting game to see for them.
How are we defining the best game of the week? Because in no way do I think this will be the best game as far as, like, two teams both vying to win. I think Florida's going to beat the you-know-what out of Tennessee, so I'm not going to pick that for, like, my best game to watch, especially if you're not a fan of either of these two teams. It's like, I don't see why you would tune into this game. So I'm going to go with Louisville and Kentucky just because it's a rivalry game. It'll probably be close. Neither team's particularly good. But as far as a game that I would want to tune in if I'm not a fan of, I would take that game.
I think that's interesting that you point that out, though, because, McCall, you talked about national implications as being a big qualifier. I think Bobby has talked about, you know, having a good game. Kyle, you've talked about that. And to me, it's storyline. Like, what's the most interesting storyline of the week? And to me, that's absolutely Tennessee-Florida.
Yeah, it should be what you're sitting down in front of the TV. You can pick one game to watch. Now, your factor is obviously competitiveness. You would just want to see a really good game.
Right.
I want the storylines, and I want implications, and I want things to think about when I watch it, because then if the game sucks, you have something that's at least interesting you can take out of it. Like, if Louisville-Kentucky is a crappy game, you got nothing, like, to enjoy that game with.
That's true.
Whereas Tennessee and Florida, if Florida, like, blows them out of the water, you're thinking, oh, what's Urban going to do at the end of this game? Like, some interesting things could happen. Or, like, what are you going to look at, you know, if John Brantley gets in garbage time and you get to see how he performs? I mean, there's a lot of things you can take away from these games, even if they're not close.
I agree with Kyle that I do want to see a good game. I want to find out which one's the best. But with that one, I would want to watch it because, you know, UF is going to make a statement with that, make a point to kind of redeem. You know, they've kept pretty much quiet through all Lane Kiffin's, like, mouth running. So they're going to make a lot of statement in this game. You know, Urban Meyer, you know, after watching what he did with Georgia last year, he's going to probably try to do something to make a point to Lane Kiffin. Like, this is still my league. You know, you're going to have to wait a while if you want to, you know, overtake me. So I think even if it's not a blowout, it'd be fun to watch to see what Florida does to a team that they're going to want to embarrass.
Yeah, all that makes sense to me. I guess I'm just going off of a game that I would want to sit through the whole way and, like, enjoy. But another one I want to throw out there, and this is a little weird, is FAU South Carolina, just because I think FAU is kind of a good team for a team that's not a BCS school, and South Carolina could potentially be upset in that game. So I just want to throw that out there. Two coaches with national championships also.
Another good game on the week, I think, Georgia at Arkansas. I like Arkansas. I mean, I know a lot of other people do too now. I thought I was, like, being original with that, and then Kyle informed me everyone likes Arkansas.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at it, it's an early, I know Georgia has to go to Oklahoma State also, but with their new quarterback, Joe Cox, this is their first conference game on the road, and if they want to challenge Florida in the East, give Florida a run for their money, they're going to have to come through this game.
Is Georgia's game at the previous week at South Carolina, or is that at home?
It's at home.
It's at home, all right. Because if that was away, Georgia's starting with a new quarterback and, you know, a new running back. That's one heck of a opening schedule for the first 3 weeks. You know, playing Oklahoma State, then if they were to go to South Carolina, I mean, that's still going to be a pretty difficult, you know, early SEC game. And then having to go to an Arkansas team that's got has a lot of potential this year. That's a very difficult early season schedule for them.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of trial by fire for, like, a sort of uncertain Georgia team going into this year. I think that's interesting to watch for.
Yeah, and that's going to show right off the bat whether or not Florida's going to run away with the East or if they're going to have to fight for it a little bit. All right, now week 4, you've got Arkansas at Alabama, Ball State at Auburn, Florida at Kentucky, Arizona State at Georgia, LSU at Mississippi State, Ole Miss at South Carolina, Ohio at Tennessee, and Vanderbilt at Rice.
Mark your calendars for that one.
Mine already is.
I'm going to go with Arkansas at Alabama. I think the West race is going to be really interesting this year. year. Obviously, probably more so because the East race won't be interesting in all likelihood. So I think Arkansas has kind of got a shot to break their way in there. And if they can knock off Alabama, that really upsets the whole Alabama-LSU-Ole Miss scenario, which I think you could very easily see them all winning one against each other.
I'm going to agree with McCall for the first time here, possibly the only time when we do this. But, yeah, Arkansas-Alabama, I think, is probably the best game of this week.
Yeah, I agree as well. I was listening to that week, though, and it does not sound like a very good week in the SEC.
Yeah.
But Sam McGuffey plays against the SEC, though, at Rice.
So. Will he get a play this year, or does he have to sit out?
Oh, so, fair point. Never mind. Sam McGuffey will not play against the SEC.
I mean, this is going to be a very big game for Ryan Mallett because – he's going to be relying very heavily on Michael Smith, the running back, to kind of take some pressure off him. With Alabama's run defense, it's going to probably be put on a lot onto his arm to make some plays. So everyone will get to see if Ryan Mallett is the real deal.
I'll make this a clean sweep, Arkansas at Alabama. Although I think I will be like out of town and traveling that weekend, and I don't feel bad about missing this slate of games. So
I'm proud of all of us for agreeing there.
We're all right.
Week 5, these are the October 3rd games, which I will miss because I'll be at a wedding. You have Alabama at Kentucky, Auburn at Tennessee, LSU at Georgia, Georgia Tech at Mississippi State, South Carolina State at South Carolina, Arkansas versus Texas A&M, that's in Arlington, and Ole Miss at Vanderbilt. I'm going to go with LSU at Georgia. I think that's a pretty good matchup, and it's really the only good East versus West matchup of the year. And I'm kind of intrigued to see what that's going to be like. You have like the team that's fighting for second in the East and the team that's fighting for second or maybe a title in the West. So I think that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, we shouldn't really have to discuss this one. I think that's probably the best game.
All right, sweet.
So let's go right on to Week 6, which I think is clearly the best week of the year. You got a lot of great games this week. Alabama at Ole Miss, Auburn at Arkansas, Florida at LSU, Georgia at Tennessee, Kentucky at South Carolina, Houston at Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt at Army. You've got three really good games in this week, I think, with Alabama at Ole Miss, Florida at LSU, and Georgia at Tennessee. I'm going to go with Alabama and Ole Miss. That is a huge game, especially in the West race, so that's the one I'm going to take.
Yeah,
for my money, definitely Bama, Ole Miss. Those are the two teams that I think are on top of the West this year, and a lot of people like LSU. Some of you guys like Arkansas, but for me, I think the two of them are clearly head and shoulders above the rest, so I will definitely be watching that game.
I agree as well. Alabama will miss. I mean, a lot of people are going to want to say Florida at LSU. They've lost, I think, 3 times in a row now at Death Valley. So everyone's going to say UF's going to have a tough time. I don't think so. I don't think LSU's ready to handle this UF team. Alabama and Ole Miss will be, for me, it's who is the best team in the West between those two.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that as well. I think Florida-LSU is a little more interesting than we're sort of letting on here, but it's like we're not expecting LSU to beat Florida.
I'm really looking forward to that, probably more so because it's the only good game that I foresee there being. I mean, I don't think the Florida-Georgia game is going to be anything real special. I think Florida-LSU, almost solely because of the environment, and it's not a tough place to play. Florida's a better team, but they're a better team than everyone they're going to play this year, and that's the toughest environment they're going to have to deal with.
The environment is great there, and yeah, definitely the toughest environment. I think the FSU game, I know Deeper feels the same way, is going to be the toughest game for them. But yeah, I think it's going to be a situation where LSU is just not, they're facing a different team than the team that went there last time.
All right, week 7, South Carolina at Alabama, Arkansas at Florida, Kentucky at Auburn, Georgia at Vanderbilt, UAB at Ole Miss, and Mississippi State at Middle Tennessee.
Tennessee, where I applied to college, by the way, as we learned the other day. So, personal connection.
I'm going to go with South Carolina, Alabama. I think that game has a little bit of upset potential since Alabama is coming off the Ole Miss game. It is their homecoming game, though, I believe. So, really only because that's the only interesting game I see on there. I mean, Kentucky and Auburn, you really want to see the two teams fighting for fifth in their divisions.
Who is Florida playing that week?
Arkansas.
I'll take Florida, Arkansas, actually. I don't know. I think that Arkansas might be a little better than South Carolina, and I don't know. When there's not a good game, you might as well get the best team, so watch Florida that week.
Yeah, I agree with that for pretty much the exact same reason.
I have Arkansas-Florida because, like last year, I see Florida having one game against a team that's not, you know, not exactly a top 25 team coming into the season and, you know, not being on their A game. I still see them winning, but I just have a feeling that Arkansas at Florida is going to be a close game just like Ole Miss-Florida, but UF will prevail in that.
It could be interesting, too, coming off of the LSU game to see if that's a little bit of a letdown or whatever after such a big, hyped road game.
You know you're going to see a close game at some point. I mean, It's not Florida's not going to beat everyone by 40. It's not going to work that way. They're going to have one game where they're a little bit off of it. And honestly, I think it'll be real early in the season. My money has been on the Tennessee game. Like, I don't think they're going to come out and just stomp and thrash Tennessee. I think it'll be reasonably close. Probably never really. Oh, yeah, yeah. As Bobby's pointing out right now, there's a 73-point spread for the first game of the year against Charleston Southern, which is absolutely absurd. Put your money on Charleston Southern. That's a lot has to happen for Florida to win by more than 73.
I don't think any site's going to be taking bets on that. No. I think it was just more of like a what they would handicap it at if they were. So, but yeah, that's insane, 73 points. That's hard to do against us if we went out there and played against the clock.
I think if they kept their starters out there the whole game, they would easily do that.
Well, yeah.
But there's no chance they do that.
If their goal was to score 73 points, they would. But obviously that wouldn't be their goal in a game like that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to week 8. You have Tennessee at Alabama, Arkansas at Ole Miss, Auburn at LSU, Florida at Mississippi State, Louisiana Monroe at Kentucky, and Vanderbilt at South Carolina. I'm going Arkansas, Ole Miss here. We've got a lot of Arkansas going in here. But you got, you know, Arkansas coming back and playing against their old coach in Houston, not wanting to spoil his title hopes. I think that'll be a really fun one to watch.
Ditto.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Week 9, Eastern Michigan at Arkansas, Ole Miss at Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi State at Kentucky, LSU at Tulane, South Carolina at Tennessee, and Georgia Tech at Vanderbilt. I guess you got to go with Florida, Georgia in this case. I'm also a little intrigued by South Carolina, Tennessee. It doesn't really have much meaning, but it's kind of the end of the Lane Kiffin I'm sorry tour. You remember, if you recall, he told a recruit that if he went to South Carolina, he would end up pumping gas like everyone else has. Well, at this point in the season, Lane Kiffin is most likely going to have been slapped around by Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. So if he gets beat by South Carolina, he may find himself pumping gas at this time next year. So that'll be an interesting one to watch, I think.
Lane Kiffin has tricked you into caring about his team. I don't know. I think UGA by far.
I would take that too. Yeah. I just think that that's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, I think Florida Georgia is the best game, but Lane Kiffin, like, he's done a masterful job with public relations and advertising. And the fact that, like, we all think, like, ooh, this Tennessee game could be interesting because Lane Kiffin's coaching. Like, no, the players are still, for the most part, not good. So,
all right, we have Georgia. I saw that in there. Last time I also did not get to throw in my vote.
It's a foregone conclusion.
Which would have been the same, yes.
Yeah, everyone was nodding. So, yeah, you saw the look in your eye. Week 10, LSU at Alabama. You probably just stop there, but I'll read the rest. South Carolina at Arkansas, Furman at Auburn, ooh, Vanderbilt at Florida, Tennessee Tech at Georgia, Eastern Kentucky at Kentucky, Memphis at Tennessee, and Northern Arizona at Ole Miss. Boy, that's really not much to choose
that's
from.
That's brutal.
But you only need one game. I mean, LSU-Alabama is going to be awesome. Really, if you think about it, LSU kind of screwed in this whole, just the way the scheduling worked out, that they have to go to Auburn and Ole Miss this year, which is definitely the worst out of the three of them vying for it. And I think LSU is probably the weaker of those three teams. So they've really got an uphill battle to win the SEC West.
Yeah. Yep. I think we all agree. Like, there's not much more we can
yes,
say.
They do.
I'm not going to argue for Furman, like, in that game.
South Carolina, Arkansas. Maybe we could give Arkansas some more love.
Arkansas has been overloved.
Right. I don't want to give South Carolina love. That's my problem.
Week 11. You got Alabama at Mississippi State, Troy at Arkansas, Auburn at Georgia, Florida at South Carolina, Kentucky at Vanderbilt, Louisiana Tech at LSU, and Tennessee at Ole Miss. Again, not an awesome week. You've got three games that are kind of all along the same plane, maybe, to me. Auburn at Georgia, oldest rivalry in the SEC. It could be a big one for Gene Chizik if he can come away with a win there, but probably not the most competitive game. Florida at South Carolina, you have the old Spurrier storyline that'll be, you know, I guess kind of fun again. And Tennessee at Ole Miss, which you guys all hate Tennessee, and...
But I'm taking Tennessee at Ole Miss this week. I don't know, I feel like that might be the closest game, so I'm going to go with that one.
I'm sticking with Tennessee and Ole Miss. But when does talking about UF playing Steve Spurrier kind of get?
Last year. I would say it became old last year.
It'll never go away, though. I mean, because
No, of course not.
He's, every time it comes up, like, oh, he's playing Steve Spurrier. You know, I'm kind of tired of it.
He's still at the point where if you had a gun to my head and you yelled Steve Spurrier and say, what comes to mind, I'd say Florida. So until the day, which he won't, but until the day that he gets past that and he's known primarily for something else, that's always going to be the case.
That's true.
He made a pretty good run with flopping with the Redskins.
But yeah, I'm going to complete the sweep for that week as well. It'll be one, like, circus coming to town versus an actual good team. So, look forward to that.
Right. Now, week 12, Chattanooga at Alabama, Mississippi State at Arkansas. That one's in Little Rock, for your information. FIU at Florida, Kentucky at Georgia, LSU at Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt at Tennessee is another easy one. LSU at Ole Miss. I'll just go on to week 13.
Yeah.
LSU Proceed. Ole Miss, but I hope FIU can start a brawl again with another Florida school.
I found out after reading Selena Roberts' column, apparently FIU got rid of their band.
Really?
Yep. No band. That was one of their budget cuts.
Like they're not letting him travel? Or
no, they've done.
Wow. Yeah. That's rough.
Yeah. Good luck for the PA guy for that.
You would have to. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really entertaining
attack. Another 3 points to the spread.
She suggested a karaoke competition at halftime. So.
Some magicians, maybe?
Oh, yeah. It's like they do for like the bad basketball halftime shows in college. Like they have magicians like stack plates.
Oh, bring in a stick man.
Bring out Isaiah Thomas. Let him entertain the crowd.
Yeah.
All right, well, week 13.
Isaiah Thomas, new basketball coach there. Yeah. I don't know if you got that. Okay.
Week 13, this is the rivalry week. On Friday, you have Alabama at Auburn. And then the weekend games, you have Arkansas at LSU, Ole Miss at Mississippi State, Florida State at Florida, Georgia at Georgia Tech, Tennessee at Kentucky, and Clemson at South Carolina. I'm going to take Florida State at Florida, although I don't think it's going to be an awesome game at all. I really don't think it'll be that tough. I mean, that's just my opinion on it, but I would still want to sit down and watch that. That's a game that I would very rarely want to miss.
I don't think any of their games this year are going to be that tough, but I do think this will be the toughest. So I'm going to go FSU, UF, and in close second, Georgia Tech, Georgia. I like Tech a lot this year. Georgia's a good team, so you'd be good watching either of those.
I think Alabama, Auburn is another one that's just like you don't really like missing that any year just because it's always going to be entertaining. It's always going to be emotional and everything, but I'm going to go with Florida State of Florida.
Hopefully the Alabama-Auburn game lives above the 36-0 thrashing from last year because that was really disappointing.
It'll be another game close to that, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to actually go with Alabama-Auburn just because I enjoy the Iron Bowl. I like rivalries. I think Alabama's going to win, but, Auburn's not – besides last year, they're usually not going to come out and just get trampled.
They're going to come out and get trampled.
For your money, is Auburn-Alabama a better rivalry than Florida-Florida State?
Yes.
Because you said you like rivalry.
I'll say yes. I'm going to say yes on that.
Historically, I think probably, but not right now. Not for the last 15 years, maybe.
Yeah. All right. Well,
we've got that.
Do we have a best game of the year? Anything really stand out in your minds? What one game you want to watch this year?
Two teams I really don't particularly care for, but I have to say this is the best game. Ohio State, USC, I think this year is going to be the best game of the season.
Were you going?
I was
going to
stick SEC.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. In that case, I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say nothing.
Any other thoughts?
No, nothing springs to mind for me, which is odd from any of this list we came through.
I think if anything, I'm going to watch the Alabama Ole Miss game. I'm really interested to see if Ole Miss can kind of upset the balance of power, and that's going to be the game where you really find out. That's the one I would want to watch because, as far as the conference race goes, I mean, you really only have the Alabama LSU. And Ole Miss thing to watch, so that's the game I want to see. That's the first of the three, also I believe, between those three teams. So that's the one I'd really want to tune in for.
I'm pretty excited about Alabama, Ole Miss, but the one for my own, I guess, validation, I would like Arkansas, Alabama, because since I'm really kind of hyping up Arkansas this year, that game will tell me whether or not Arkansas is going to be for real or if they're just still a couple years.
I think Alabama Ole Miss will be like the most exciting game, the most interesting game storyline wise. It's not the one I'm like the most excited to watch or whatever. I think Florida Tennessee could be the most entertaining just because it's going to be a circus with Lane Kiffin coming to town.
I feel foolish for my D for like moment a couple minutes ago, but yeah, I'm going to take Bama Ole Miss. Ole Miss is the team I like the best this year that kind of like appeals to me the most. I find the most interesting, and that's the biggest test for them. Definitely two pretty good teams in the West. Probably the winner of that game will play UF in an SEC championship game.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on and talk a little more about some news segments here. Kyle, start us off with the biggest breaking news we had from our paper this week.
You built that up way too much. But Ahmad Black, the starting safety for UF, he missed a couple practices to start fall practice. He missed both the open ones, and it was just reported that he had a back injury. A source close to the team that I had said that he came in 10 to 15 pounds underweight and that he missed a meal after the first day of practice, a team meal, obviously designed to, like, help them reach their weight. So Urban was very upset with him and held him out of practice the next day, said, don't come back until you, take care of business, start putting on some weight, start making an effort, that kind of stuff. So I wrote it, and we asked Urban about it on Monday, and
he didn't like exactly, he wasn't like, yes, exactly that's what happened. But I asked him, did he report underweight? And he said, yeah, that was part of all the things that were going on. So I never said he didn't have a back injury. I'm just saying, I know that's why he missed that particular practice. Urban didn't really fight on it. So he at least acknowledged that he has had a weight problem. And then, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say that I know for sure. I haven't confirmed, but I'll tell you, I don't believe Ahmad Black had a back injury at all because at Florida Media Days, they asked Ahmad Black, hey, what kind of back injury do you have? I don't even know, you know, just a back injury. And then how'd you hurt it? I don't remember.
Right.
If you're an athlete, you know everything that goes wrong with your body, and you know how it goes wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that was when a lot of red flags went up for people. Are you kidding me? Because normally these guys can name off these, like, complex medical terms, like, pretty well and like, speak them like very clearly and like understand it, which most people wouldn't. So they know what's going on with their bodies.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me my personal opinion, I don't think he was hurt, but I just, as far as facts, things that we can prove, we can't really prove that. But yeah, that whole incident about not knowing how he hurt his own back is really, really odd. And I know for a fact that the reason he missed that practice was because of this. And also the source said that coaches like got in people's faces throughout the team and said, you know, hey, don't miss a meal. Like, we made an example of Ahmad, you know, that kind of thing. So for him to kind of come back, and then we asked him about it, and we'll play the audio clip in a second here. It was a really awkward interview where he pretty much just denied everything, even though Urban had just confirmed it. So we'll play that now.
So you didn't report underweight?
Touch my eye, said you did. What do you think about that?
Not a back issue. I wasn't clear yet. I didn't get clear to that, like, that Sunday night. I know exactly how
Meyer said you had some problem with grades?
Nah.
No?
Nah, not like that.
Okay, so what you hear in that clip is first one of the writers asking him if he came in underweight. He denied it. Then I asked him, Urban Meyer said you did. What do you think? He denies it again. And then another writer asked him about his grades because that was part of the like total package thing Urban was talking about with the injury, with him reporting underweight and some classroom stuff. So that's pretty much what you get out of that clip, along with the crazy awkwardness of interviewing a player that everyone knows is lying to you. So that was Ahmad Black and what he had to say on the issue.
The awkwardness of that is really embodied by that just like awkward standoffish, well, let's move on at the end, like, at the end of that interview. So I really enjoyed that. But how did he look? Did he look nervous when he was like having this interview?
Not really. I think they know they're ultimately pretty protected and it doesn't really matter. And honestly, the news wasn't even that big. I mean, it's somewhat of a concern because safety is supposedly a raging position battle right now with Will Hill pushing the two starters, and he's not taking care of what he's supposed to be taking care of. So that's somewhat of a concern. And then also the fact that if he didn't have a back injury, then we were pretty much just lied to by the coaches and the media staff. So
I think it's somewhat concerning whenever you don't have a starter before a season, like he's not fulfilling his duties. Right. Because like, you'd think at this point in the year they should be really focused on what's going on, especially as you hit 2-a-days. I mean, that's when you're locked down, school hasn't started yet, you're totally focused on football. I mean, this is one of those things, though. I mean, I guess I can kind of see it. I mean, you need to be where you're told to be when you're supposed to be there. But he's probably looking at it like, okay, I led the team in picks last year. I was really awesome. Like, what do I need to put on, like, 6 pounds for or whatever? Like,
right, but that's kind of the attitude I know Charlie Strong has talked about, trying to fight off where just because guys made plays last year or have done something in the past, they have to make sure they don't excuse them. So he's talked specifically like, if Ahmad Black does something wrong, we don't want to look at him and say, well, he had that pick in the national title game, or he did this, he did that. They want them to make sure that they're fighting complacency and not satisfied with just resting on what they've done in the past.
I mean, I assume someone has sat him down and talked to him about this, but just the attitude he had, even in the interview, he just seemed cocky, like, you know, so what if you guys caught me? It's no big deal for me. But, I mean, he's, like, last year when he got named starter, it was just because Dwayne Monroe went down and Will Hill wasn't quite ready, pretty much. It just seemed he was holding Will Hill's spot. And now he's coming in, and it obviously motivated him to, you know, have the year he did. Now he's coming in, just seems overly confident, not taking care of his business, doesn't seem like he's, you know, really, like, motivated to continue his success. Whereas Will Hill, who's, you know, never been a backup in his life, most likely, isn't about to sit back and just, you know, sit on the bench the whole year. So, I mean, this is dangerous territory for Black to come in and just kind of seem like he's, like, expected to be the starter.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Will Hill is hungry to get on the field, and the coaches love him. So I don't see any reason why
if Ahmad, you know, if Ahmad Black is to slip up, Will Hill is going to slide right in and potentially be better than Black was. And if that happens, he'll never see the field again in a meaningful role. So if I were him, I'd be real careful about staying on top of my stuff during the fall practices and leading up to the season.
Has there been any of that talk, though, after this incident, before that even, you know, notifications that maybe Will Hill will, you know, see a lot more time?
Oh, absolutely. They're going to play Will Hill somehow. And the way they're going to do it a lot is in the nickel package, because that way they can go to three safeties and put three guys that they feel are very good off the field. And that third linebacker spot, which A.J. Jones looks like the front runner for right now, is the weakest probably spot on the field. And that allows them to take that guy off the field. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Will Hill slide in and play some safety when they only have two of them in, just because of the way Charlie Strong's talked about him and Urban Meyer and the rest of the coaches.
I mean, when he finally started to, you know, understand what was expected of him last year, Will Hill, you could just see there was something special about this kid. I mean, Ahmad Black was solid, did great things, but the certain plays that Will Hill made, and you can tell that this kid's going to be a great safety, a great college player, and have a good career in the NFL just because of how gifted he is and how he plays the game.
I'd like to know what you guys think while we're talking about the safety battle. I mean, we've heard a lot, this offseason about how they're trying to get that third corner, so when they move Janoris Jenkins to nickel, they have another guy to come in and play corner, and so that if they want to put Joe Hayden on offense, they can do that by, you know, resting him for a series on defense by bringing in the third corner. When I look at it, I would not be real – obviously, I haven't been in practice, but I would not be real confident in Markie Anderson or Wandy. I don't know much about Adrian Bichelle or Jeremy Brown yet, but every offseason we hear about how Markie Anderson and Wandy are working really hard and trying to get their spots back, and they just want to play, and they never do during the regular season. So I'm curious to see what you guys think about it, because it seems to me like what you want to do is have Janoris, Hayden, Wright, Black, and Will Hill on the field. If that means putting Ahmad Black covering someone man-to-man, because I know that's what they said bothered him, Will Hill wasn't as great in man-to-man coverage. Ahmad Black used to be a corner, right? I mean, wasn't that what he was when he got here?
Exactly.
Let him play man-to-man. Let Will Hill and Major Wright play back there. Hey, for once, put Major Wright in his position. Let him play strong safety and put Will Hill at free safety.
Yeah, everything you said definitely makes sense. But except I have to say, I think Markie Anderson actually does look good. The coaches have been really high on him. And a little bit we got to see with open practices and stuff, he looked really good out there. Wandy's just not good enough to play on this team. Like, I don't know how to say it. And then they've said some stuff about, like, Wandy looks good, Wandy's working hard, but I definitely don't see him seeing the field. I think Anderson's the only one who has a shot on that next tier of corners to really come up and get some playing time.
Yeah, Markie was going to be the starter 2 years ago before he had an injury. And then last year he was fighting that injury to come back and seemed to continue to get hurt and stay and couldn't really get back to where he was. So, I mean, if he is healthy, he could be a good third option. With Wandy, I basically see the same thing as last year. They started the season with him as a starter, kind of hoping that he could, you know, show the... because he has speed, he has height, he has jumping ability, he has all the potential to be a good corner, kind of like Kyle Jackson had the ability to be a good safety, just wasn't. So, I mean, I think they'll throw him out, see if he can, you know, kind of redeem himself from the last 2 years. And if he can't, they throw him on the bench, use him as special teams, and in the early games, Charleston Southern and Troy.
Yeah, they're
and
then
once
have
that,
time.
Once
garbage
that,
time.
Oh yeah, yeah, garbage yeah. time. Yeah, yeah that's, no. You're making it sound like he was going to come out like kind of start the year like atop the depth chart.
No, I mean, I think he'll be a three or four where they use him in the nickel occasionally, even if it's earlier in the game on Charleston Southern Troy. They're not too worried about it. They just want to see how he looks, and then when he obviously probably will look bad like he usually does, and they'll say stick to your special teams. And they'll have to bring Will Hill in nickel situations.
See, I feel like if Anderson has shown the most promise, though, why even bother with that? And why not just put him third right away? Go with your best players, develop them from the start of the season.
He's definitely third right now. I feel very confident in saying he's third right now after being, you know, at practice the whole time. Just the way the coaches talked about him, what we've seen out of him. What I've seen out of him in the past, too. I feel like he's been a good player in the limited roles he's seen on the field, whereas Wandy is a disaster trying to make a tackle. Ball skills aren't great. I mean, he's got, like, the raw – he's a track guy, so he's got the raw athleticism, but I feel like his football skills aren't that great.
I mean, like the coach had been saying, they don't really like Will Hill in the nickel because he's not as great in coverage. So with Markie Anderson, although I agree he's right now the third, he has had the injury history. You have to have someone behind him ready in case they want to stick with this cornerback nickel situation. And Wandy right now appears to be fourth, with Jeremy Brown also has had bad injury history. So they're not really deep at cornerback. Although they have a lot of guys they seem to like, they're not really deep with experience and, you know, quality experience.
Marky Anderson is still one of those I'll believe it when I see it situations, because it sounds almost verbatim like the exact same things I heard from all the coaches last year. Like, oh, he's really motivated. He's coming out to take that spot. Like, he just wants to get on the field. I mean, it's literally the same things every year. So I'll believe that when I see it. Where do you guys think Dee Finley fits in?
Before we get into that,
linebacker or what?
You mentioned Jeremy Brown. I think that's the guy they want to be at least fourth and maybe third, because they've said so much about him, even though he's been injured and he's missed some practices. They want him to be able to step up and take that role.
But well, he came in with Janoris Jenkins, and they were supposedly side-by-side doing just as well, and then Jeremy Brown got hurt. So there's a lot of promise for him and a lot of potential.
Dee Finley not playing. I mean, he'll probably do special teams this year, but I think they're still trying to figure out if it's going to be best suited to make the switch to linebacker, play him at safety. I don't think he'll see much time actually on defense, mostly special teams this year. And then when some people start leaving, then they'll see where is the best fit, either linebacker or safety, and they'll make that move accordingly. But this year, I don't think he sees the field much on the defense.
Yeah, I know Urban doesn't like to redshirt guys too much, but I'd tag him with the redshirt. I mean, you got to start saving some talent for later. And Dee Finley, I just don't see any spot for him right now on this team.
Well, talking about that, you know, you say you could put him in the secondary, but that's deep as anything. You put him in the linebacking core, but that's, you know, maybe even deeper. Kyle, you wanted to talk before about how deep this roster is and how, you know, it's hard to go to any position without having, you know, ton of good players that are even sitting on the bench.
Yeah, and all the stories I've been writing and kind of the position battles we've been examining, it's really remarkable how deep this team is. I know a lot's made of it, but they even go past the two deep. They're three deep at some positions. They're four deep. It is impossible for guys who were four-star, five-star guys out of high school to crack some of these rotations, and it's really incredible to look at. When you come here, I don't know that you got to be really confident in your abilities, because you're going to be competing with some guys every day in practice that it makes your job really hard to get on the field. But I think they know, you know, if they do win a starting job and get on the field, they're going to go to the NFL most likely, and they're going to be well prepared. That's probably the appeal of it. But you look at some of these guys who get buried. Dee Finley was like a top two. Him and Will Hill were the best two safeties in that class. He went to prep school for a year because he didn't qualify. And then now he's here and he's, you know, probably not going to see the field even in a backup role. So it's really just remarkable some of the guys who get buried on the depth chart.
It's just a very funny situation to me, because most teams enter fall camp with, all right, we know we have our middle linebacker. Who's going to, like, what of these, like, you know, guys without experience is going to be our outside linebackers? Whereas the Gators, they have Brandon Spikes, he's our middle linebacker, and then it's, you know, which of these guys can we pick from that have, you know, ample amount of experience to be the starter, and we'll still have three or four guys to come and rotate in. It's just the depth there. This is a coach's dream to have as a problem, where it's, I have too many guys to put on the field.
Let's talk about some of those guys, though, that you guys mentioned before we started recording here. A.J. Jones was one guy you said you're gonna see a little bit more of this year.
Yeah, the two surprises, or the two guys who've kind of emerged so far in camp, Stamper's definitely got one of the other linebacker jobs. It'll be the two of them starting. And then they're saying A.J. Jones right now is a starter if they had to go, which you so many guys competing for that job. Lorenzo Edwards is looking better, they say. Brandon Hicks has been good in the limited time he's seen on the field in his first couple of years here. You got two freshmen that came in, Bostic and Jenkins. So I just see that position being more of a rotation. And then the other guy is Jay Howard, who Bobby just wrote a story on at the defensive tackle position.
I mean, defensive tackle, it's not as deep with that type of talent. They have Lawrence Marsh and Teron Sanders as their starters from last year, and they actually lost John Brown and Torrey Davis as possible rotation guys, and Matt Patchen went over to the offensive line. So there is kind of who's going to step up and fill time. They always expect big things from Amar Hunter, but it just doesn't seem as though he's quite ready to be that the big star that they all expected. Jay Howard has put on 25 pounds and has worked really hard to become a better run stopper, which is ultimately the most important thing for a defensive tackle, because when it comes down to third and long, they're probably going to bring in a faster defensive end to play inside and rush, whereas defensive tackles for the most part are just supposed to take up as much room as possible, don't let them get to a certain hole, and make them have to bounce it out to these faster guys who can make tackles better, easier than they can.
At that defensive tackle position, Earl Okine's in there a little bit too, right?
They really haven't mentioned Earl Okine too much.
I'm say sure he's probably no higher than fifth there. Yeah. But something else they might do, and I know McCall is pretty big on this idea, thinking that they'll do it, is go to a 3-4 a little bit with three down linemen, just because they have so many big linebackers they can bring off the edge. You can get Spikes coming off the edge or some of those type guys. And I think that's a really smart move. If D-tackle is the one position that's up in the air, put one of them out there, throw in another one of those great linebackers who are fighting for playing time, and it'll give you some different looks there.
Yeah, it's the idea you should always have your best players on the field, no matter what, you know, what you have to do for them. Urban's always talking about, you know, arranging his system to his players. It's like, if you want to do that this year, you put as many linebackers as you can.
The big problem with that move is that the person they need to be ready to go to a 3-4 is Omar Hunter, because you need an even bigger guy to play defense, to play the nose guard position. And, you know, Lawrence Marsh, Teron Sanders, Jay Howard, all, you know, big guys, 290s, but you need someone in his 300s to fill that space. You need someone who needs to be, almost be needed to be triple teamed in order to stop him.
Think Terrence Cody on Alabama. Yeah. I mean, that's what you mean.
Yeah, if they had Terrence Cody, not a problem here. Yeah. But, like, that's the big problem with 3-4 is they need Omar Hunter to be ready to be that one guy in the middle.
I'll tell you what I do like about a lot of the defensive linemen. Maybe not all the guys that are all going to play this year, but like the Jay Howard and Earl Okine guys who came in and were ends, pass rushing guys, and put on a lot of weight, and now they can be quick in the interior and they can play outside with three down linemen. I mean, I think that's all interesting stuff that could work pretty well in the future.
I've for the last 2 years I've gone on long rants about how I would rather have someone who is a smaller player come in and put on weight as a defensive tackle. That way, one, he has more of experience fighting in the trenches against, you know, these smaller high school linemen, whereas a 330-pound doesn't have to do too much work. And he's quick. He's got probably good footwork and knows how to use his hands well, whereas a 330 can just throw a guy to the side and run right past you. I mean, I played offensive line for a little bit at 185, and I went up against a 300-pounder. He manhandled me.
And these
it wasn't
guys are,
fair.
The weight these guys are putting on is muscle, coming from being a thin, wiry Carlos Dunlap type, rather than coming in and being huge and trying to, you know, convert that, lose the weight and then put it back on, or not just be fat. So, I mean, that's another plus of those guys.
Yeah, and also I think another plus is that the area that they said they'd like to improve on the most is pass defense, not allowing so many yards through the air. And when you're moving these guys in, like I know Jay Howard specifically, like his question mark was run defense. Like he was always been a good pass rusher. So now you're getting not only pressure from the outside, but you're getting some pressure from the middle also with guys who have experience rushing the passer.
I mean, the best way for me to help your defensive backs is have a good pass rush. If that quarterback has, you know, 3/10 less of a second to throw a ball, your DBs don't have to cover them that much longer. So that means they can't get open. It's harder for them to get open, which makes a quarterback look worse, makes the defensive backs look even better, all because you were able to get a strong pass rush. And if they can do it just their front four without even blitzing, that makes their defense even more dangerous.
Yeah, they're going to have great ends coming off the edge between Jermaine Cunningham and Carlos Dunlap. And also Justin Trattow is going to be in there a lot, and the coach is really high on him, although he's had a little bit of injury problems in the offseason.
Also, is Willie Green playing defensive end? Now is he a linebacker? Because he's another guy who was very small last year when he entered, but has apparently put on a lot of weight this offseason, and they've talked about him a good amount.
Yeah, I think you're going to see him at the end now because he has bulked up big time. Like, his body is just completely different than it was when he came in.
All right, now one other player we wanted to talk about. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Matt Patchen, where does he fit into the offensive line? Would he start, like, if they played today?
Yeah, they said if they had to start today, he's the starter. Him at left tackle, Carl Johnson at left guard, Marquise at Pouncey at center, Mike Pouncey at right guard, and then Marcus Gilbert at right tackle.
Nice work, Bobby.
Nice.
That was awesome.
Nice.
Right,
I'm proud. Yeah.
Normally we have to write that stuff down for you at home, so that was good to pull out of the air.
I think offensive line is the most interesting position battle because you have guys battling each other who don't play the same position for playing time. So you got like a guy like Patchen who's battling for the tackle position, fighting someone like Sam Roby who's trying to get in at center, because you got a guy like Carl Johnson and the Pounceys who kind of switch positions a little bit and they're locked in. You just don't know where they're locked in. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. And they'll probably play some kind of a rotation there too, obviously.
For me, one of the big things to watch for in the Charleston Southern game, because, I mean, it's not going to be, you know, a very competitive game, but the offensive line competition could get very interesting in that game. Because there's a very good chance that Marquise Pouncey cannot play with it since he's still injured. Sam Roby might have to start at center. So if he has an exceptional game and Matt Patchen not so great at left tackle, you might see that when Marquise comes back, he goes to the guard and Carl Johnson switched over to tackle, and Sam Roby stays in. So if I'm Sam Roby and I get my chance to start, I'm going to make sure I make the most of it and just hope that Matt Patchen doesn't have a good day.
So the only wiggle room here to what Bobby said is that you drop you drop Sam Roby in at center and then slide the left side of the line over. You move Marquise Pouncey to guard, and then Carl Johnson out to tackle. So it's really up to Matt Passion and how far he comes. And also, they've been talking about James Wilson a lot, but it's another one of those cases to me where they talk about a guy a lot, but it's not going to come to fruition until, I mean, James has to stay healthy. I watched him play at Nice, and he's an incredible guy. He's really good, and I still think he'll have a good career. He still has a lot of time, actually, believe it or not. But, you know, that's another one of those things. They need him to come along also because you need depth and you want depth, and that's a guy to provide you some depth because he can play at both guard positions. And they were saying tackle a little bit this offseason, but that didn't make a lot of sense to me because in the spring they were talking about how they definitely want him at guard. He doesn't have the kind of body type they want out at tackle.
Your depth at line is obviously important because it seems like every year you're going to get at least one or two injuries that are going to affect your team. But speaking of injuries, let's talk about these two guys in practice that have been hurt. Kyle, you want to update us with that?
One career-ending injury, another potential. Paul Wilson, wide receiver that they brought in from Lakeland, in the same class with all the other Lakeland guys, Rainey and the Pouncies and them. He broke his foot for the second time, and he's not going to play football again, as Urban Meyer said. So he's out, and Jim Berry, offensive lineman, he tore his ACL and had surgery on it. And again, the situation where he re-injured it, he might stay on as a student assistant, Meyer was saying, but he's probably done, depending on the doctor's diagnosis, I think, this week.
And they lost a Byron Jones transfer as well. Do we know where he's going by chance?
No. It seems really early in the process still for him.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. I guess let's talk about some freshmen in practice that have been de-striped. If you want to explain the whole de-striping process first and then explain who the guys are.
Yeah, basically when you come in as a freshman, you get a black stripe down the middle of your helmet. And as a combination of your peers, other players, and the coaches, whoever shows the best effort early in practice, the best focus, gets the stripe taken off, and it's kind of an honor, especially if you're the first, which this year was running back Mike Gillisley, more so for his effort level, which is what Meyer said, than him actually grasping the offense. As Kyle's about to tell you, he puts forth great effort in practice. And then after that was offensive lineman Jonathan Harrison. And it's a pretty good sign to be the first guy to have the stripe taken off your helmet. That was Percy Harvin when he came in. He was the first guy to get the stripe taken off. I'm not sure. I think maybe before I'm not sure if Tebow went through the whole black stripe thing since he enrolled early. Mm. But I know Percy Harvin had his taken off quickly. So that's a good sign for Gillisley. Not a great sign for DeBose. I don't know if it's like a motivational ploy with him where they're trying to say, oh, you haven't made it yet, which could be the case. But that's the kind of guy when the class is coming in and he's the headliner, you want to see him be the guy. And I'm kind of surprised Bostic and Jelani Jenkins haven't had theirs off yet because it sounds like they've performed extremely well in practice.
Yeah, last year the guy who lost his stripe first, though, was William Green, who hasn't done anything
blocked
yet.
Punt?
So. Okay, he blocked one punt, so obviously he's in the Percy Harvin class of upstripe removal. But, yeah, obviously you want to get that off quick. Gillisley is, probably not going to see much playing time, though, with the running backs that are in front of him. I think guy Jonathan Harrison, they've really been building him up on the offensive line. And if somebody gets hurt or something, I could see him playing this year. And a lot of the D-tackles have been saying he's a beast on the inside, so who knows what you're going to get out of him. And the other one was Jordan Reed, who's not a quarterback, in my opinion. I don't know. Like, he plays quarterback, but he got it for taking out a defensive lineman in the circle of life drill, not for completing passes or showing accuracy.
Lineman he weighs 10 pounds more than. Right. Just throwing that out there.
One more thing I wanted to talk about with this offseason stuff, especially with all the talented freshmen coming in, is, Florida's so stacked with talent and there's so much competition at every position that it's really starting to look like a pro team almost. I mean, your job is never safe right now, and I think that's the best sign of health for this program that you could possibly have. And one thing that was really interesting to me is Lou Holtz came and spoke to the team a couple weeks ago, and I talked to him on the phone about when he came and what he saw and what he thought. And he said that, maybe he just saw a weird practice when he was here, but he's been up for a lot of practices in the past, and that it looked like nothing he'd seen before at a college. He said the focus was so intense and the competition was so intense that everyone was so afraid of slipping up, and they were all, so focused and so driven because there's so much competition at every position. He said it looked like a team that had something to prove. And I think that's coming from, because the team obviously doesn't have that much to prove other than winning all their games this year rather than losing one and winning a national championship, which honestly isn't that huge of a deal, but that they all have something individually to prove, trying to earn their spot up there. Because you hear a lot of these players talk about how, and Urban Meyer talks about a lot, the uncle that complains all the time about their playing time. These kids are highly rated recruits. They come here, they get stuck on the bench, they get buried on the depth chart, and they don't play. and they're trying to prove that they're good and that the hype that they came in with was warranted. And I can't say enough about how impressed I've been with other people being impressed by it, because I haven't been there watching, obviously. But just hearing all the players and all the outside opinions of this team and the way practice is being run, I mean, this is going to be a heck of a team with all the competition at every position. And this sounds bad, but I'm really excited to see when someone gets hurt or when someone comes out, who fills in there and how well they do. And if you could have someone take someone's starting job like that, I mean, I think that's going to be something that's really fun to watch.
All right, no, one more thing. I really have no idea how to transition into this, but it's a recent story that came out. Bobby Bowden was asked a question about Charlie Warder, one of the greatest players he's ever seen, you know, greatest players in college football history or whatever. And McCall, you got the story up.
Yeah, so they asked Bowden about the greatest player he'd ever coached. He said Charlie Ward, and then he started talking about how people always ask him about Tebow, and then he started comparing Ward and Tebow. And his quote was that he said, "People keep asking me about Tebow. I don't know if he's better than Charlie. I don't think he runs better than Charlie. I don't think he throws better than Charlie. And Charlie only played quarterback 2 years for us." Now, if we look at the stat breakdown, Charlie Ward only played 2 years, but at this point, Tebow has only started for 2 years, so it's a pretty fair time to make comparisons stat-wise. Charlie Ward was 473 of 750 passes, that's 63%. Tebow was 448 of 681, which is 65.8%. Ward threw for 5,747 yards and 49 touchdowns. Tebow has 6,390 and 67 touchdowns. Ward, 22 picks. Tebow, only 11, which is, I think, the most impressive thing to me about Tebow's career is how small number of interceptions he's thrown. And then rushing yards, Charlie Ward, 889 compared to 2,037 for Tebow. Ward has 10 rushing touchdowns, had 10 rushing touchdowns. Tebow has 43 rushing touchdowns so far. Obviously, the stats are pretty overwhelmingly in Tebow's favor. The one thing, I know that, like, the early 90s maybe doesn't count as a different era, but to me it is, just based on the kind of offenses that are around now. And it's kind of comparing across eras to someone who, if he played in the kind of offense that Tebow's in now, maybe things would be different. It's really not even worth arguing. I mean, by stat and by performance, there's no question that Tebow is a better player than Charlie Ward. But, you know, thinking about how Charlie Ward came in from high school as a kind of option running quarterback and then they had to transition into a more pro-style offense at FSU and did very well. I mean, he was an excellent college player, or else we wouldn't even talk about this at all. I think Charlie Ward deserves some credit, and it shouldn't be totally dismissed as preposterous, but it's kind of a comparison you can't make, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the two problems I have with this is that, okay, it's not ridiculous at all to me that Bowden said this, because Ward's his guy, and it's totally fine, but then it was weird to me to watch it on ESPN and like, different news outlets like that, and actually hear them, like, some people back up Charlie Ward as better than Tebow. I thought that was very odd. And then the second thing is, I heard, like, Jemele Hill and maybe other people said that Ward was definitely a better runner than Tebow, and that's, like, that's offensive to me. Like, have you watched Tim Tebow run the ball ever? I mean, he plays in a conference where Herschel Walker and Emmitt Smith both played, and he has the single-season rushing touchdown record. Like, it's unbelievable. He's going to punch it in every single time. He's going to pick up all your short yardage. He's effective at all parts of the field, picking up 10 yards when you need it. So I think the passing, you could make an argument for either way, because Tebow's maybe not the greatest passer, but he protects the ball much better than Ward did, obviously, better than anyone does, really. And the running is just not even close to me.
The only thing I could even see as their argument for why Charlie Ward might be the better runner is because Tebow is a power-style runner, right, whereas Charlie Ward was an elusive-style runner, which is usually more exciting to watching someone, you know, make a cut and juke someone and have them fall over and break their ankles. That's more fun than watching Tebow just pound it for 5 yards. But, I mean, you the numbers tell us that he can run. Like, Tebow is as effective runner in the nation as any running back right now. So you can't make that. To me, this argument is just ridiculous that Charlie Ward is even being brought up in this conversation.
I know the passing thing to me is perhaps more ridiculous, because Ward threw the ball more times, had less yards and a worse completion percentage, and threw more interceptions and less touchdowns. So, like, to me, that's, like, really, like, tough to try and make a case for Ward being the better passer. Although, you know, Tebow has great weapons that he's throwing to, and he doesn't have to throw really far down the field all the time or anything.
I mean, if he threw more, there's a better chance he had more interceptions and a lower completion percentage.
Yeah,
but the fact that less touchdowns and less yards.
But those numbers were way closer than the rushing numbers. The rushing numbers are a landslide. So, and like you said about the new offenses, I think that probably brings the passing more into play than the running, because you had option as far back as we can remember. So
the only thing I could even make another case for why the numbers running wise was such a was so different was, you know, the first year Tebow started, he didn't really have a running back to for them to count on. Whereas Charlie Ward, I don't know who the running back was at the time, but there's a good chance FSU had a very good running back that could take a lot of carries away from him. But still, the number is just so large between the two of them.
One thing I'd like to point out in this discussion, I'm going to throw out David Garrard as a better college quarterback than Charlie Ward. More rushing yards, far more passing yards. Done.
The eyes just out. Yeah, the eyes just rolled of everybody in this room except for McCall. I'd like to throw that out
there.
That
guy thought Mike Teal. Like, come on.
All right, let's move on to our final segment here. We're going to give out our weekly awards, the Reggie Nelson Awards for excellence in the field of sport and the Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. Something good and something bad we saw in the week of sports. Let's start off with our Kyles, and we'll start with Bobby.
My Kyle is to Ahmad Black for not taking the offseason very seriously right now and lying to us. I'm very betrayed.
All right, I'm going to give my Kyle Jackson to Dustin Doe. He'll be back with the team practicing after some of his legal troubles soon. But I want to take this down for his censorship of himself, I guess. He had a Twitter before, which was one of the funniest things ever to follow because it was just like his daily accounts filled with profanity, which was really fun to read. And he started a blog called Really Do Really, which props for the title. But I'm going to give him my Kyle for taking down that Twitter and, you know, restricting our access of what we can hear from the mind of Dustin Doe.
Good choice. I'm going to give my Kyle Jackson, since Bobby totally pilfered mine, to preseason polls. I really hate preseason polls. The AP is coming out soon. The coaches' polls are already out. It's completely pointless because, in my opinion, a poll is you're judging them on some sort of accomplishment in a ranking form, and no one's done anything at this point. And it just gives teams farther to climb or farther to fall to get in or out of the polls. So, preseason polls.
Yeah, I don't like polls either. And I don't have a problem with Bobby pilfering it because I'm going to give it to Ahmad Black also, just because I feel like not even so much for the way that he handled, you know, missing his meal and everything, but coming out to the media and being like as weird and standoffish and not admitting anything as he was. I mean, if you just come clean about it and say, yeah, I made a mistake, I missed the team meal and everything, you can do a lot for your public image for that rather than just lying about it to everyone, and that causes a lot of problems.
All right, Kyle, I'm going to let you go with your Reggie first so nobody else pilfers you this time.
Well, I was going to go with an interview theme of somebody who I liked and somebody who I didn't like. So it was going to be Ahmad Black, and then my Reggie's going to David Nelson, who is expected to be, you know, perhaps the number one receiver, certainly a receiver who sees a bunch of time this year. He's just, they trot him out all the time to talk to us, and he's a guy everybody likes in the media. Really well-spoken and really thoughtful guy. So David Nelson, of my 2 weeks, 3 weeks here covering practice, he's going to get my Reggie.
All right, Bobby?
My Reggie is going to Jonathan Phillips, the kicker. He, on Tuesday, he had missed practice for law school orientation, and he, while being on the football team, will be attending law school. Very difficult feat for him.
All right, now I'm going to give my Reggie to two people here that we work with. One, Harrison Diamond, who I think may have fixed our echoing problems. We have a lot of audio problems that we've encountered here with the podcast, but I think Harrison like turned one knob and may have solved all our problems. And also our new producer, which is a new title, I guess, Andrew Stanfill, who is making sure we sound good and cutting our audio so I don't have to, really. So props to those two guys for helping us out.
Yeah, my Reggie is going to go to the Southeastern Conference, or Southeastern Conference, as I will now be referring to it. You know how when you're on the internet and you go type in the address bar, you don't feel like typing out like .com or just doing a Google search, and you just type Southeastern Conference in the address bar and it'll take you to secsports.com. It'll do the work for you. It's basically like the I'm feeling lucky button on Google, except in your address bar. So I don't know why I did this, but I was messing around and I typed Southeastern, S-O-U-F, Eastern Conference, and it took me to secsports.com. Meaning that secsports.com took the time to register that to take you to their website, which is nothing short of incredible to me. And I applaud them for their foresight and knowing that some people would misspell their conference as Southeastern Conference and still take them to the website. So bravo. As Adam was saying earlier, you know, did that happen during a meeting where people sitting down talking about that? Like, oh, we're losing a big chunk of our audience here. They're all going to the Southeastern Conference website. So we need to register this.
I'm really excited to see, like, what else they might have at this point. Like, what other domain names do they have?
I tried a few other. Southeastern and Southeastern also work. If you take out the U or O, they also work. But then there was one more I tried that I thought would work that was, like, pretty basic. More basic than Southeastern, for sure. It did not work, so.
Yeah, that certainly, that was interesting. That cracked me up when I first saw it. But I guess that about wraps it up for today's show. Send any feedback to sports@alligator.org. Comment on the blog. Keep us going on the iTunes. Get us past a free case of Monster Energy drink. That'll make my week, guys. Trust me. And I guess check back. Hopefully, beginning of the week, we should have another show for you. So thanks for listening.